All right, settle down. Everybody's attendance is quicker today. Before I take your questions, we're going to hear from our administrator for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, Craig Fugate, to give you all an update on the flooding in Tennessee and Kentucky, as well as the storms that we all saw last evening in Oklahoma. So, sir?
Well, thank you. And good afternoon, everybody. Last couple of weeks, we've seen a lot of severe weather moving through the southeast Atlantic states and Gulf Coast areas, including now central parts of the U.S. Yesterday, as many of you know, we had a rather significant tornado outbreak across Tennessee going into Arkansas. Right now, reported 5 fatalities, numerous injuries, and we have been in contact with the state team there since last night. We already had a presence in Oklahoma from previous disasters, so we're working with Albert Ashwood, the state emergency management director, and his team. They are requesting that we conduct joint damage assessments with the state for both impacts to survivors as well as the government. They have no outstanding federal response needs, which is given the severity of the tornadoes, many people say, well, why isn't FEMA responding? And the answer is because in many of these disasters, the local and state responders are dealing with the response phase, and they're assessing whether or not they're going to need federal assistance for recovery. But earlier in the week, we did see another severe weather outbreak, this time manifested in heavy rainfall across Tennessee, Kentucky, as well as Mississippi. And that did result in significant flood damages, particularly in Tennessee, where the governor requested on Monday of last week an expedited major presidential disaster declaration, which on Tuesday the president concurred with and declared that a disaster did exist in the state of Tennessee. Prior to that, we actually had folks working with Tennessee as we knew the severe weather was impacting the state with the flooding. We have regional offices, 10 of them, and our office in Atlanta, Region 4, which covers the state of Tennessee, deployed staff in Saturday evening and began working with the state. But once again, much of the response was being done by local responders, state officials, volunteers, and other groups. And so again, our role in this response was to support recovery. And that recovery, I'm afraid, is going to be substantial. So far, just as of this morning, over 23,000 people in the state of Tennessee have registered for individual assistance. Right now, we have already approved in our system $51 million. For individual assistance. Much of this is going to individuals who have lost their homes, did not have flood insurance, or had uninsured losses. And we expect these numbers to continue to increase as we do that outreach. And again, through your ability to get the word out to folks, the process of beginning that assistance with FEMA is to register. And so if you've been in the state of Tennessee or watching that, we've been talking a lot about this, is you got to register at 1-800-621-FEMA to start this process. After Monday, I had actually met with the governor and brought his request back. I went back Thursday and particularly wanted to get out into some of the more rural areas of the state, western Tennessee. There's a lot of focus on Nashville. So the tendency is, the images you're seeing is that Nashville got hit hard. What about the rest of the state? And I can assure you that this, what you saw in Nashville, was being replicated across the state, moving all the way over into Shelby County and Memphis. Little communities such as Militant, up where the Naval Air Station is, got heavily impacted. Small towns throughout rural Tennessee, heavily damaged, flooded, businesses still underwater. In fact, on Thursday when I was there, you still had water rising in parts of the river system there. A lot of impacts agricultural, but a lot of impacts to homes. And unfortunately, again, not many people having flood insurance. We're going to be working to support that. But the great story out of Tennessee was the level of participation of volunteers, faith-based organizations, local responders, the state, and our role as the federal government in support in the recovery phase. Since that time, Secretary Napolitano was there Saturday, met with the governor's team to address issues. We've had Secretary Locke, we've had Secretary Donovan yesterday, SBA Administrator Mills there today. One of the things we know about these large-scale disasters is FEMA does not provide all of the tools necessary for complete recovery. And in this case, it's with the duration and the types of disasters. It's going to require full federal response and a full federal recovery going far beyond our FEMA program. So we already have been working at the president's direction to start addressing not only the immediate needs of the survivors, but also beginning to look at long-term recovery for the state of Tennessee. This response, again, on top of tornadoes previously in the week in Mississippi and Alabama, today President Obama has declared the state of Kentucky now as part of the disaster from last weekend. and we continue to respond in support of those survivors, those communities, but through the state teams. The Tennessee Emergency Management Agency and FEMA have actually put together a Facebook page to help update people with fast-moving information and allowing people to share information. We'll get you that information. It's kind of one of these long-winded things. It's like TN disaster info, TN for Tennessee disaster info. But again, the idea of starting to use more and more of the tools that are reflective for people. And then the last piece, before I'll turn it back over for questions, is when you're dealing with these situations, a lot of our stuff we've always done on the web. Well, if your home's flooded, you don't have internet, I can't get to the web, how do I get information? Fortunately, about 2 weeks ago, we'd been working on something to get out a mobile version of our website. So if you have your phone, you can get information in a format for you. So if you go to m.fema.gov with your phone, you can get information that's tailored for you, the survivor, to figure out very quickly the sources of information, get those links, and be able to get assistance without having to go through the full website. That just happened to be something that came online, but it's really, I find, very useful for people who are not at home, probably staying at a hotel, staying with friends, or staying somewhere else like a shelter trying to get information. So again, m.fema.gov, 1-800-621-FEMA, in all these states where we have individual assistance declared, the first step is to register. And the last part is, we cannot do this response without the communities themselves, the state, and the federal family. It's like I tell people, FEMA's not the team, we're part of a team, and we're there in supporting the governors on behalf of the president, Secretary Napolitano, in this initial response phase.
I got time for a few questions because we've got to get the administrator to the Oval Office. He and the president are going to talk to Governor Henry from Oklahoma.
When we were in Tennessee on Saturday, we talked to Secretary Napolitano, and she said that the extent of FEMA's ability to help was limited.
Yes.
Given how many people there did not have flood insurance, how heavily impacted they are, and how limited the FEMA aid is, where do you suggest these people go beyond that? I mean, obviously $29,000 isn't enough if you've lost your home and you don't have flood insurance.
That is correct. That's, I think, part of the reason why we look at disasters a lot differently than probably in past, and we know that it takes a full federal team to support recovery. We have a lot of programs that Secretary Donovan brings to the table with the HUD, Community Block Development Grant, other types of programs that help. Plus, another thing that we've not always done well on the federal side, and that is really collaborate with faith-based and volunteer organizations that can oftentimes provide labor and other assistance to people in trying to rebuild their homes where we can use our dollars for materials. And so again, if you come in and you do what I call a federal-centric or government-centric response to these disasters, you're going to have a lot of unmet needs because we do have very defined programs and limits to those programs. But if you look at a team approach and looking at what are the resources in the community, where are we going to be able to pull resources together to address particularly those folks that just are not going to have many other options. For a lot of folks, some of the more affluent neighborhoods, SBA disaster loans will help them get their homes repaired. But for those that don't have the ability to do the loans and where our grants may not be able to return their home back to a usable condition, partnering with volunteers and other groups as part of a team effort gets us to those unmet needs. And so this is our approach of not just looking at what one program can do, but how do we leverage the entire federal family, but recognize there's a lot of other resources in the community that we have tended not to bring to bear or work in a coordinated fashion. Oftentimes they were trying to do one thing, we're over here, we're not talking, and we don't help the survivors.
Leads that? Is it your team or is it the state?
It's a joint team. We go into a coordinated response with the state. I have a federal coordinating officer. It's appointed by the president. It's Gracia Check. She's there, worked a lot of disasters before. And we work with TEMA, the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency. And then at each local level, you have various groups, but generally coordinated through the county or city emergency operations center. So one of the groups that we were working with and talking to that set up some of the first information center was All Hands, a volunteer organization that was already working getting information to the survivors in the aftermath of the disaster. So it's our ability to, one, work with the state as a team, and then bring in and work with some of the more traditional volunteer organizations like Red Cross and Salvation Armies, but also some that are very localized or may only be in one community. Yes, sir.
The Tennessee delegation sent a letter to the president today asking for a separate appropriation in the supplemental. I wonder if he's had a chance to consider that yet.
I will check with Legislative Affairs to see if the request has been received and what it might be. I'll have them check on that. Yes, ma'am.
I'm wondering if either one of you can talk about the administration take on the Hill hearings today, where BP and the other companies are sort of pointing fingers everywhere.
I'll do that when we get to. Can we? If you guys have any more.
Is FEMA going to have any role in the oil cleanup at this point?
FEMA's already had a role. You understand that we're dealing with a separate statutory authority and a separate funding stream to respond to an oil spill where you have a responsible party. So a lot of people go, well, what's FEMA's role? Our role as part of DHS, as part of the present team, is a support role to our lead agency within DHS, Coast Guard. We've been supporting them with actual staff as far as public information and liaison roles. But we don't do a lot of oil spill stuff. So we are more of a support role. But we've been engaged from the very beginning. I was actually involved in one of the briefings with the president early on when the initial aftermath was still focused on search and rescue. And so our job at FEMA, I think, is a little bit different than what you've probably seen before in that how we responded to Haiti, how we responded to oil spill, where FEMA's not the lead agency. The president commits to full team. We all have support roles. And in this case, our support role is within DHS is to the Coast Guard for some of their coordination staffing issues of some things that we can add to their response. But in many cases, this would not be untypical of another federal agency having lead, but where FEMA is still a support role.
April.
Is FEMA financially able to handle all of these disasters right now? Because we understand recently FEMA was running out of money, and there was a call for more money from Congress to approve money for FEMA.
You're referring to the Disaster Recovery Fund, which is an allocation that we're given based upon potential disasters, also dealing with previous disasters in the past. Around the February timeframe, we were running to a point where our fund balance was getting below what we were comfortable with having to deal with existing disasters and future disasters. So we go into what we call immediate needs funding. And what that means is we are still funding response, individual assistance, and immediate needs. But we have stopped all funding for permanent work going all the way back to disasters prior to Katrina. So we have limited our funds to just those things that are necessary to do a response, to meet the initial needs, take care of individuals, the survivors of the disaster. But we have stopped all of our permanent work until we get a supplemental to support that.
So for this immediate funding, this immediate needs funding, I mean, how long does it take for this money to run out? How much money do you need or how much money do you have to deal with these emergencies?
It's really kind of an unknown. Given where we have right now with Tennessee, we're still fine. We're still responding, but it is finite. And so, again, we are working. The House has passed the supplemental request. It's now with the Senate. We have done things to really minimize our impacts and be able to continue to focus on response, and we continue that as we await final resolution on replenishing the disaster recovery fund.
Same. How much is the supplemental?
The request from OMB and us as we worked this up was $5.1 billion.
Same.
You mentioned Katrina. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about how much the lessons learned from Katrina are guiding you in Tennessee and what some of those lessons are.
To me, the big lesson was I was actually the state director in Florida during that time frame. I was there through the 04 hurricanes and stuff. You got to go in as a team, you got to work as a team, and you got to focus on survivors. And I think we've been able to demonstrate with the president's leadership our commitment to that and his commitment to bring the full team to bear. It's not one of these things where one agency is trying to solve all the problems by themselves. We really bring together the expertise of all the agencies and look at what the needs are.
Yeah. Hurricane season starts in what, 2-3 weeks? What shape are you in when a first big storm hit? Will you be able to handle it?
Well, the first big storm, generally hurricane season may start June 1st, but really the time frame when you start seeing the more devastating hurricanes tends to be about August, mid-August through. Again, we are resetting because as much as people focus on hurricanes, and I come from a hurricane-prone state, Chile and Haiti should have taught us something. We don't get to pick the next disaster, and an earthquake can strike at any time, any other event that could occur. We have to be ready all the time. So although hurricane season gives us a reminder to get people ready for something, at FEMA, we have to be ready 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I don't get the luxury of waiting for a forecast season. I have to be ready to go. So we keep adjusting. Even with Tennessee and others, we have a lot of disasters going. We keep resetting our team and looking at where we're at and go, right now, if something happened, what are we ready to do? And what do we have to do to be prepared?
About the situations right now, are you fearful that you might not be able to meet the need because things arise with the financial problems that you're going through?
No. I mean, if I looked at it just as FEMA was the only game in town, I might be a little bit concerned, but we're not the only game in town. We work as a team on the federal side, again, with the relationship that we have in this administration across all our resources. We're going to respond. We're going to take care of people. That's not the question. The question is really getting back to the permanent work, and that right now we cannot move forward on without the supplemental.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. It's like tag team wrestling, isn't it? It's I'm all for that. Let me just give you guys a quick update on tomorrow. Elena Kagan will make her way to Capitol Hill, as I think some of you know. Let me give you the schedule that of senators that she will see. Senator Reid at 10 a.m., Senator McConnell at 11 a.m., Senator Leahy at noon, Senator Sessions at 12:45, and Senator Durbin at 2:30. And as we get updates to that, we will provide them to you. Ms. Love.
I guess I'll resubmit my previous question. Your take on the Hill, the BP hearings on the Hill, and all these companies pointing fingers in opposite directions.
Well, I don't want to get in the middle of their finger pointing, except to say that we obviously have an active investigation per what the president tasked the Interior Secretary. To find out as to identify the cause of what happened. The president, I think you all got a readout from the president's meeting yesterday. Watching him in that meeting, I would say the president is deeply frustrated that we have not plugged this leak. That's what the focus of that. I would say that's what a majority of the meeting time was spent on. Secretary Chu is heading to the area and to work with the response team to make sure that we have some of the best and brightest minds down there trying to think through next steps for doing so. But I think the president is deeply frustrated.
Can I switch to the climate bill coming out tomorrow? Does the administration support, or is it pushing for a provision to let states have veto power over offshore drilling plans by other states?
I don't know the answer to that inside the legislation, but I can have somebody check and see if that's where that might lay. All right. Yes, sir.
Robert, one question. European debt crisis, and then one follow-up on the oil spill. First on Europe, how, as the White House has monitored the European reaction to this, how big of a risk is what's going on there now to the U.S. economy and, in fact, indeed to the global economy as a whole?
Well, look, I think any time, let me just say this. Obviously, our economic team and the president have been engaged over the course of many weeks in monitoring the situation that was going on with many of these countries, encouraging them to take the steps that are necessary to deal with it, because of a fear that anything might stem the recovery that we believe is taking place, and not wanting to see any of that happen. The president spoke this morning with Prime Minister Zapatero from Spain, who will seek reforms in his parliament, I believe, tomorrow. So it is something that the president and the team have been actively engaged on to ensure that it doesn't unnecessarily impact either our recovery or that of the global economic recovery, which has obviously been the topic of virtually every multilateral meeting that the president has traveled to, and including the events in Pittsburgh last fall.
Spain,
Spain is a country that many are concerned would be a much bigger crisis if it were to default. Why did the president call Zapatero this morning, and what did he say?
Well, I'm not going to get into the personal aspects of the call, except to say that we continue to play a role in encouraging the Europeans, as I said a minute ago, to do what's necessary to ensure that this problem is dealt with and doesn't spread.
But why Spain?
Well, obviously they're one of the countries that, as I said, that are because of some of their problems, need to undertake reforms that the Prime Minister is starting to work through.
And then one question about the oil spill. The Interior Department announced today some reforms. Will there be more regulatory reforms and proposals coming through in response to this oil spill similar to that?
Well, look, the president was very clear with the team again yesterday. He wants everything to be looked at. I do think it is tremendously important, and the president believed this as well, the steps that Secretary Salazar is beginning to undertake, and understand that this this is not going to require legislation. That the secretary can do this administratively, to split off MMS into one that is concerned with leases and royalties, and one that is concerned with management and safety, and to ensure that an agency with a purview like that never gets its two tasks mixed up. I think that's important going forward. But as I've said before, and as the president has said, we will look at everything, every bit of this process, to ensure what can be strengthened, what needs to be changed, what might have been the cause, and how we can rectify that. The president is very serious about ensuring that the notion of fail-safe means that. That has to mean something to him. Given what's going on. Yes, sir.
Robert, just to follow on the EU rescue plan, has the president in his conversations with these European leaders gotten a sense of confidence that this rescue plan is enough?
Well, look, I don't want to get too deeply into their personal conversations, except to say I think the president and the team have believed, as I think many in Europe have, that steps needed to be taken, and these are important steps in ensuring that that this doesn't spread.
What's the level of confidence that this?
Well, again, we think the actions that were taken were necessary, needed, and we're glad they happened.
On Karzai meeting with the president, you and other administration officials have talked about how, you know, he's the elected leader of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, very little is said about whether or not there's real confidence in him. I'm wondering if there will be strong language from the president tomorrow in saying, listen, I need you to do this, I need you to do more in order to build confidence.
Well, look, I'm going to take this a couple of different ways. First, a little bit more broadly. The president is focused and always has been focused on substance. We have a job to do with a partner in the government and the country of Afghanistan. That's what the president's focus is. That's what our team's focus is. We're not going to get bogged down in atmospherics or personalities. That's not what we're here to do. Our focus will be on evaluating the progress that's been made since the president increased our forces there, and to go through what progress has been made on a governance side. We understand, and I think the government of Afghanistan understands, the importance of the steps that it has to take, both, again, on the security side, in training a force, a security force and a police, an army, as well as what it takes to hold an area and ultimately have that area transferred to the control of the Afghans. That's the process, right? Clear and hold in conjunction with ISAF and Afghan forces, building and transferring that to the control of the Afghans. That's the process that they'll talk through tomorrow.
Well, I'm not sure that totally answers the question, though. I mean, I guess I'm trying to get a sense of the president, when he sits down with him, yes, he'll talk about all the progress that has been made, but is he going to hold his feet to the fire?
Dan, I don't know if you saw or read yesterday's briefing. We went through a lot of this. We have a relationship with the people and the country of Afghanistan where we're going to have agreements and disagreements. We're going to laud them for the steps that they take, and we're going to work with them to do what is necessary to deal with the problems of governance, accountability, and corruption. I think it's been the reason I started with the atmospherics and personalities is because I think people get focused on that and they don't see some of the progress that has been made. Right? You heard Ambassador Eikenberry talk about this yesterday. There are high level corruption trials that are going on right now. The High Office of Oversight now operates with a mission to increase its accountability, and we are watching, as we will always, the implementation of that. We've asked for, and Karzai has signed a law to improve subnational governance. Again, we will watch the implementation of that because, again, all of this is necessary on as we undertake the security and the governance side of this. And we've asked for, and President Karzai understands the need for fair and transparent parliamentary elections that are upcoming. I think not long after the president visited with President Karzai in Kabul, there were some important appointments to the Electoral Complaints Commission, which we think is an important step forward in dealing with a fair and transparent parliamentary election that's in the interest of the people of Afghanistan as well as in our interest.
Robert, can I follow on that?
Sure.
I get that the White House is encouraged by some of the steps that President Karzai has taken, but on the Hill, there seems to be still a great deal of skepticism. Majority Leader Hoyer said this morning that he doesn't think that President Karzai is up to the task of confronting corruption. I'm just wondering, does the White House share that skepticism?
Well, again, I'd refer you to the answer that I gave, which is we believe there are steps that they've taken, and we believe there are more steps that they have to take. He's the president of Afghanistan. We'll have... I think there's a lot of people that are working on that. We're focused on, again, we're focused on the security and the governance with our partner in Afghanistan. Yes, ma'am.
Robert, there's underwater video of the leak in progress that BP has that they have said that they would release to the press at some point. So far, they have not. Has the president and who in the administration has seen this video feed? And does the White House think that the public should have access to this?
I believe the Coast Guard has asked for BP to make that available to the press. So the answer to your second question is yes. I don't know the degree to which who in the administration has seen it. I believe that it is. I believe that they have seen it at the Unified Command Centers in the area. I don't know who in the administration has seen it.
But if the White House is in charge, if the federal government is in charge of all of this, couldn't they force BP's hand to make that video available?
Well, we've asked that to happen.
Well, why hasn't it happened?
Well, you'd have to ask that to BP.
Second question, can you elaborate a little bit more on Beau Biden? We've got this sort of cryptic email from the Vice President's office today. Can you tell us anything more?
I don't have anything more than what you've been told by the Vice President's office, and updates on that will come from them. Yes, ma'am.
Whose war is this in Afghanistan? We keep running them, telling them what to do, and so is it our war, or is it their war, or is it a civil war?
No, there's a there's an international component to this, Helen, because the attacks that were planned when the Taliban had an area that allowed Al-Qaeda to plan what happened on September 11th, obviously that occurred in the United States.
We don't know what happened and why it happened.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We have never had an explanation of why they want to attack us. And don't you think it's because we're there attacking them?
Well, we're there to ensure the safety and security of our people after the safety and security of our people were threatened on what happened on 9/11. That's why we're there, Helen. And the international community is there because there have been attacks all over the world as people.
We never try to find out.
No, I think we have. I think we have seen, and you've heard the president talk about people have distorted one of the world's great religions into believing that terrorism and violence is the answer.
You're talking about the Muslims?
I'm talking about some who have corrupted that great religion, yes. Certainly not everybody, and not everybody by a long shot.
And when we go in to kill and maim and send bones, is that Christianity?
There are things that have to be done. I'm not going to comment on specific tactics. There are things that that we're doing in Afghanistan through, again, an international security force to ensure that Al-Qaeda does not have a safe haven with which to plan attacks on our country or countries around the world. Bill, you're good. Chuck?
A few things. Did the president talk with Prime Minister Brown today?
Did not yesterday. Obviously, just as I was coming out, he made a statement. As there are developments of Britain forming a new government, we'll reach out to if that's David Cameron. I'm sure the president will have an opportunity soon to speak with him.
From anybody in the last 24 hours?
Not that I'm aware of. No.
The decision, you said the president has asked Energy Secretary Chu to go down there, I guess, is he leading a task force to try to come up with new ways to plug the hole?
Secretary Chu is down there based on some improvements that that he suggested on ways to look at what's going on in the leak.
Was there any orders before yesterday to, hey, can we work on can we have X agency working on figuring out alternative plans to plug the hole?
Chuck.
Or was it all relied on BP?
No. Chuck, we've been doing everything. We've been doing everything that we can. I know that, some people have criticized, the military didn't send a C-130 down until, I said this, I think, at one point on the back of the plane. There's not somewhere on a dock in Annapolis, a secret submarine that would fix this leak. I don't mean that to be funny. I mean that the president has asked that everything in our power be done. Everything in our power is being done. The frustration that the president has is that despite all of that and despite the efforts of others, there still continues to be a very large oil leak.
And do you feel like at this point BP's as forthcoming as they can be and doing everything that they can at this point?
What if we have problems with what they're doing, we have communicated and will continue to communicate to them things that have to be done. That's why Secretary Salazar has been down there so often to ensure that everything that can be done is being done.
Any additions to the schedule before next Tuesday for Senator Spector?
No. Yes, ma'am.
It appears that Solicitor General Kagan did an interview yesterday right after the president's announcement. You've now posted that on the White House website. Mm-hmm. Who did the interview, and can I have one?
I think it's on the website if you want to see it.
Do you know who did the interview?
Yeah, I think it was Arun who does the video stuff, similar to what we did with Judge Sotomayor during the last one.
So a White House staffer interviewing her.
Mm-hmm.
Would she like to do another one?
The journalist?
She has. She's not told me that. No.
Helen, we're deeply frustrated.
I will. Yes, Major.
Who is the president frustrated with, or is he frustrated with BP in this? Oil situation?
Maybe he's frustrated with the fact that there's still a leak.
That's it. There's no.
Well,
no.
That's it. Let's not minimize. That's it. Yes, he's frustrated with the fact that we're still sitting
he's
in a place.
Frustrated with BP's efforts so far, or its ability to.
Major, let me be clear, because I don't want you to put words in my mouth. That's why I'm answering. The president is frustrated with everything. The president is frustrated with everybody. In the sense that we still have an oil leak, that includes us. That includes anybody that's involved in this. The president wants to see this leak plug. Mark.
In that meeting yesterday, was the president told that, yes, sir, there is a way to plug it, or is that still a possibility? It might not be able to be plugged.
Well, there were a series of things that I think BP has talked about that members of the group went through. A smaller containment dome to take into account the hydrates that had formed 5,000 feet under the ocean with the larger containment dome. The president was briefed on progress that is being made in terms of drilling a relief well, which candidly will take quite some time, and as well as getting updates on our progress on dealing with, again, the oil that has come up, how it's being dealt with both at a subsea and at a surface level, and the impact both environmentally and economically, largely what the president has been focused on the whole time.
In the readout you put out yesterday,
mm-hmm.
You said the president called for independent experts to be brought in and help.
Yeah.
Today's the 15th day of this.
Again, BP, I know, has consulted with. I was in a meeting the first week of this where John Holdren in our Office of Science and Technology has consulted with people in and out of government, as has Secretary Chu and others.
So the president still believes it can be plugged?
Believes that, and the president wants us to do everything in our power to ensure that that happens.
Robert, can you follow on that?
Robert, the senators approved an audit of the Fed's emergency lending that mm-hmm. it exercised. The president will be supporting or signing that bill, I assume?
Well, I don't want to fast forward the Senate's process. That's part of financial reform that you heard Deputy Secretary Wollin say that the administration supported last week.
And is there any concern at the White House here that that provision would alter the independence of the Fed at some point?
No, because, again, this was our original concern was that the broader amendment as written by Senator Sanders would unnecessarily politicize monetary policy. That was our concern with it. He rewrote that amendment to ensure that it was directed at the transparency as to what had happened as a result of the financial collapse and the money that had to be spent, and we were supportive of that transparency.
So narrowing the language then.
Well, again, we supported the amendment that passed, the Sanders amendment that was rewritten. Yes, sir.
Does the president's interest in revising Miranda come from a specific case that he feels did not go as well as he might have liked? And if not, why does he feel the current system is not as good as it could be?
Let me share that, look, I think that what has happened in this case, I think you've heard officials discuss that the public safety exception was used to originally question Shahzad. There was intelligence officials, the Attorney General consulted. The power was given to those in the room, experienced interrogators, to decide when the best time would be to do that. They did that. Mr. Shahzad continues to speak with those that are questioning him about those events. Our only thing is to look at, as we have in each and every case, any ability to provide necessary flexibility for those in law enforcement to ensure that they're able to get what is needed. But I think that the Helen, I think we discussed this yesterday. The president's a believer in this law, and that's why, despite a lot of armchair quarterbacking from people with not a lot of experience in interrogation, have brought this up. But the president is committed to it and ensuring that we have protections as well as flexibility. Sure.
The Daily Caller today reported that Valerie Jarrett and David Axelrod have drivers, government drivers, to and from work, and
afforded Secret Service protection, and I wondered if that is correct, and also, are any other top aides to the president, Rahm or myself or others, accorded that status?
Accorded what status?
Secret Service protection.
And the driver. Each president is afforded 6 opportunities to provide transportation. The president does that.
At his discretion.
Yeah. I'm not going to get into who has protection and who doesn't. That is a decision that is made by the Secret Service. I will mention that the number of non-statutory protectees, obviously there are people that have protection based on the law. The Secret Service makes evaluations as to those who might need it. Again, I'm not going to get into who, where, and why, but those currently in our administration, there are 33% fewer non-statutory protectees than at the end of the previous administration.
And can you just explain, does the protectee status come with the car?
No.
Or is that a separate
decision that the
president makes to provide transportation?
No. The president doesn't make protectee decisions. Protectee decisions are made by the Secret Service. If you have questions about that, I would speak with the Secret Service.
Okay, so he makes the decisions about the transport.
He has up to 6 that can do that, yes. Yep.
Can you say why he chose Valerie and David?
Based on their jobs.
This is on the documents from General Kagan's White House service. I'm just following up on what you guys were saying about this yesterday. Mm-hmm. Is it your anticipation that all of those documents will be made available?
Well, it's my anticipation that the committee and individual senators will seek documents from her work via the Clinton Library, we look forward to working with them to fulfill reasonable requests.
Is it your belief that the executive privilege will cover any of those documents?
I'd have to check more deeply with counsel on that. Mark?
Just briefly, Secretary Chu is being asked to do, is he going down there to propose additional steps or to try and get BP to take steps that they haven't?
Well, Secretary Salazar has been down there to ensure that we're comfortable with the pacing of their response. He's been down there, I think, a number of times. He's traveling back down there with Secretary Chu in order to look. They've got the various different response teams that Secretary Salazar thought he might be helpful with.
Can we just add one thing to that? Will the White House get involved in the decision about which documents would be made available by the Clinton Library, or do you think
that? I will check with counsel on that.
Robert, it's May 11th. And it's 20 days away before the Black Farmers deadline comes up May 31st. $1.25 billion, then you have COBEL $1.4 billion, and then you have FEMA, for what the FEMA head just said, $5.1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money. Realistically, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, I'm not going to get into prognosticating, except to say you know those are priorities of the president. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Administrator Fugate said, on the disaster relief fund, that supplemental appropriation has passed the House of Representatives. I think they tried to get unanimous consent today in the Senate, and that was objected to.
So what about the Black farmers? They are pushing for this money. It's 15 years.
Yeah, I think you've seen the president's statement on that, and we continue to work to make that happen.
John Boyd wants a meeting with the president. Is he going to get that?
I have not seen that request, David.
Is the president considering a trip to Pennsylvania to help Spector, who looks like he's in trouble?
No, I
just want to be clear that he wasn't thinking about it. Okay.
Yesterday, Fannie Mae said it needed another $8.4 billion in aid. Is that a concern, and how long is that going to go on for? They're going to continually need that much?
Well, again, I think that was in line with what we had expected in terms of their losses. We are strongly supportive of the need to reform the GSEs. As you heard, again, last week, I'd refer you to the answer that Deputy Secretary Wolin gave in terms of Secretary Geithner having started a process for this. We are eager to see reform, but understanding that reform has to take into account a very fragile housing market. We look forward to working with Congress in the future on that. I don't think that should be a cause for any delay in the reform that the Senate is considering now, that the President and I believe many believe is necessary in putting important rules to the road going forward. David? Yeah.
Related to the Gulf oil spill, do we know whether MMS approved displacing the mud in the pipe before Halliburton finished the cementing plugging cement?
I'd point you to MMS. David?
Thanks, Robert. In all the President's briefings on the BP oil spill, has it come up that this might go on for weeks or months? And if so, is anyone in the government considering what to do in that case, how to deal with an oil leak that goes on for such a long period
Absolutely.
Of time?
Absolutely. No, I mean, I think I referred to it earlier as, look, the estimates for drilling a relief well are many weeks. Yes, we talked about that yesterday.
So who's involved then in talking about contingency plans on the government end and how you do?
Everybody that's involved right now. I mean, again, let me see if I can remember sort of going around the table yesterday. I think you saw these names on a readout, but there were John Brennan was there, Secretary Napolitano was there, Secretary Salazar, Secretary Chu, John Holdren, who I mentioned earlier, who was sitting in front of me. Carol Browner was there. Dr. Lomchenko was there from NOAA. Hold on, EPA, the Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullen, General Jones, Rahm Emanuel. This was a pretty senior level meeting at the White House in the Situation Room with the President.
What are some of the ideas under consideration for dealing with a leak that goes on for months?
Well, from the government's perspective? A lot of that obviously happens as a result of, obviously there's modeling that has to take place, and NOAA is working through some of that. EPA is monitoring the air as it relates to aspects of controlled burns that we've tried. Monitoring obviously is going on as it relates to, as I said a minute ago, subsea and surface dispersants. Even as SBA is in the area working through the claims process for the economic damage. So, David, I don't think there's anybody that's not involved right now that would be called in to deal with long-term as they're already here. Sam?
Just two questions. One was going back to the Miranda rights issue. A lot of lawyers actually have spoken up that the reading of the Attorney General about the public safety exception is a bit loose in that they're taking much more time than was generally believed to be allotted for a public safety exception. Will the administration look?
Walk me through.
The legal reasoning behind that?
Yeah.
Well, for starters, I mean, I could get very detailed, but essentially it's supposed to be a very limited time period in which you can exercise the public safety exception. For instance, if someone burglarizes a store, it's to look for his gun. And this
set up the quarrels exception for public safety.
My question
right?
is the same. It doesn't matter with interpretation. Is will the administration look for a legislative vehicle to expand upon what would?
Well, look, I would say this: the president is interested in limited flexibility. The president believes that. That the law that we have in place is an important one. And obviously any change that would take place would have to be done legislatively.
And the second question is, White House sent out the op-ed in the Wall Street Journal from the former Harvard Law mm-hmm. Dean about military recruitment on campus. But earlier today, Vice President Biden said that Solicitor General Kagan was right to oppose military recruiters. I'm wondering if you can expand.
Well, we sent out the op-ed because I think you have seen those that have said the military did not have access to the campus at Harvard Law School, okay? The op-ed that we sent out, for anybody who hasn't seen it, I'd be happy to send it to you, is from the former dean, the dean that preceded Elena Kagan, who instituted the policy of non-discrimination that Elena Kagan continued. Again, we sent this out so that because there's people that are either don't know or unwilling to understand the facts. The military had, through a student organization, access to Harvard Law School students. And the semester in which they did not have access to the Office of Career Services actually saw an increase in the number of Harvard Law School students that joined the military. Bill?
Robert, 68 United States Senators, Republicans and Democrats have sent a letter to the President asking him to support ratification of the international treaty banning landmines. Mm-hmm. What is the administration's position?
I don't have the updated. I'll get something on that. I know there was some discussion of that recently.
But the administration, the United States hasn't used them since 1991, so why the hesitation about that?
My hesitation is that I just don't have anything on it.
Thank you, Robert.
Robert, the United States traded and had diplomatic relations with China and with the Soviet Union, but with Iran, we insist they jump through all kinds of hoops and meet certain conditions. Why can't we just establish after
what do, what do you mean?
That's clear, I think. You say that they have to come to the table and talk. Why can't we just establish normal ties with Iran like we had with China and the Soviet Union and traded with them fully? Why can't we do that with Iran?
Maybe I'm misunderstanding your question. We've offered on any number of occasions. We've offered to allow them the opportunity to live up to their international obligations and to enjoy what comes from being part of the full international community.
But I guess the question is, why can't we just unilaterally recognize the Iranian? Why can't we do that?
Maybe I'm misunderstanding your question. Again, we've given them, I think, plenty of opportunity with which to join the international community. But being part of the international community means living up to the obligations and the treaties that you've signed that are part of the international community. You can't be part of the international community and then not live up to your responsibilities as it relates to nuclear activities. I think you saw the President discuss last fall in Pittsburgh a fairly specific instance in which they were required to live up to their responsibilities internationally, and they failed to do so.
On Guantanamo, real quickly, it's been 4 months, I think, since the one-year deadline has passed. We haven't heard too much about Gitmo lately. Bring us up to date, if you could, on that.
I don't have anything new. Obviously, last week, I believe I may have, I think at least two detainees were transferred to European countries. I forget off the top of my head where those are. We continue to go through and ensure that we have go through the files and make sure that we have a proper accounting of those that are there, understand and make transfers on those that we believe are able to be transferred. No. This is these are people that that can be transferred again to someplace like, I think it was Spain and Bulgaria, but I'm relying on a week's old memory on that. So, but we continue to work for a long-term solution that would close that facility. Thank you.